I have
current geek.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Current Geek. This is Current Geek for Friday, May 30th, 2014, and this is the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All-Stars, Geeks of the World, and you. To keep you current on the things that matter most, I'm Scott Johnson. That's Tom Merritt.
Hey, Scott Johnson.
Hey, man.
This means it's Friday. I'm always so excited to do Current Geek.
Yeah, we're always looking forward to this. It kind of marks the end of the week, and whatever the weekend holds, we don't know. We're not future sayers. We forecast occasionally, but we don't know what the hell's going on. The
weekend could hold a bird in its hand. Mm-hmm. It could have bacon. It could have a tasty piece of chocolate. We just don't know.
Wow, a bird in the hand. Isn't that more than double bush. Three in the bush, or how's that go? Yeah. I don't know how it goes. Something my grandpa used to say.
Bush birds stock is falling. That's all I know.
Great. We have a couple of geeks with us to help us roll this episode. Let's start with our newest comer. Ladies and gentlemen, joined to the show, Mr. Jeff Cannata. Jeff, hello.
Hello. I am so pleased to be here.
It's awesome to have you, and it's a long time coming. You've been on the list forever, and it's just been a matter of, all right, well, we're going to finally ask Jeff, and by gum, we did.
And I would say everybody should watch the list because I've been on that several times and it's fantastic.
The list is great.
It's a high quality show.
Yeah, it's real good stuff. You were a cop, right? Or something?
I was.
All right.
I was a cop. I hear your kiss was on the list. Is that true?
Yes, your kiss is on the list.
Great. With that knowledge, let's move over to our other guest. He's a returning guest, his second time on the show. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Brecky back to the show. Say your last name so I don't screw it up, Brecky.
Thomason. It's literally the son of Thomas.
Thomas' son. Yeah.
If I had a son, you would just say Thomas' son.
I've become nervous when I say the Scandinavian names, various, you know, sort of Norwegian names or people from Iceland or whatever, because I always get it wrong. So I'm just a little, you know, just a little trepidatious there with that.
Well, it's funny, you're lucky you're not
interviewing my Icelandic friends, though.
Right. Hey, is it hard to say Scott Johnson? Anyone have trouble with that? It's a rough one.
I think it's ironic that Johnson didn't know how to say Thomason.
Well, you'd be right. You'd be right about my heritage.
How do you pronounce this IKEA bookcase? Billy?
Billy? Billy?
99-cent meatball? What?
All
right, well, let's get right into it.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Oh, Tom, tell us the great news of the week, please.
But yes, I will. First, am I the only one that imagines a little baby radio every time we play?
I do, every time.
See, I knew I wasn't crazy. Rob Stack submitted our first story in the Top Talk, this one on our subreddit, currentgeek.reddit.com. LeVar Burton launched a Kickstarter for Reading Rainbow. If you don't remember, Reading Rainbow, it went out of production in 2006, went off the air in 2009. They ran reruns for 3 years. There's been an app for a couple years, but it was only available for the iPad. So to fund a web-based version, which would make it more accessible to a lot more devices, Burton is kickstarting $1 million. And among other things, that will help put the program in 1,500 schools for free. Oh, by the way, the Kickstarter definitely already funded. In fact, it already passed $2 million.
Yeah, we're close to three.
Yeah,
I was going to say, we're real close to three. So I gotta say, I'm kind of I'm super stoked about this, and it's great. And there's the whole Geordie connection and, you know, I was a big fan of Roots, too, so way to go, Kuta Kinte. All this stuff's good, right? I'm into it. But I feel like it's a little out of my range now because when this show was in its prime, I had little kids, like little babies and kids, and now my youngest is 14, just turned 14. They're kind of out of it now, kind of out of that range, so I felt less driven to go over there and throw money at it. I did, but I didn't feel quite the spark that maybe I should have. But then I thought, well, Tom probably contributed, and he has no offspring that we know of. So
tribute.
But it's exciting, right? I mean, everybody kind of nerds out a little bit about this because regardless of age, I think everybody always saw this and sort of respected it. And whether it was your own kids watching it or us realizing that, oh my gosh, he's doing Star Trek and this, how cool is that? Like that.
I used to watch it with my brother.
Yeah.
Who was, this was in the early days when it first went on the air. I'm trying to find out when it first went on because it went on in 1983.
Mm. Is that right? Wow.
Yeah. That's when it started. So in the mid 80s is when I started watching it with my little brother who was just learning to read. And so my memories of it are not for myself so much as like, you know, doing something with my brother as he's like figuring out how to read for the first time along with LeVar Burton.
Well, yeah, because you and I would have been like 13, I guess. Oh, that's that's crazy. I didn't realize it went back that far. Jeff, you have a, any connection to the Reading Rainbow?
Oh, big time. Yeah, I have several thoughts about this. And they're going to be probably a little cynically slash negative. But I want to say, as I had those thoughts, I went and actually watched the video, the Kickstarter video.
Yeah.
And it is so pure and genuine and good that I want to temper what I'm about to say with the fact that I'm just so pleased that this really does seem to be coming from the right place and be, and it's doing good. It's the goal is to deliver this thing free of charge and actually help kids to read, which is great. So having said that, and I would want to underscore that I have said that and do believe this is a wonderful thing. the things I want to say are, A, I instantly thought, wow, it's a shame that I feel like I would guess the 60,000 plus people that donate to this, I wonder how many of them have ever even considered donating to PBS. Probably very few.
Yeah, you're probably right. Think about
or other literacy programs.
Right.
Yeah.
So, okay, there's that.
I thought about this too, but
the other thing that occurs to me is, and you bring this up directly in the sense of, I would guess most of the people that donated to this aged out of the appropriateness, which is a wonderfully selfless thing to do, is to donate to something that doesn't benefit you directly. But, and I would also argue it does benefit you directly because a literate young portion of our population is good for everyone. Yeah. However, I think it really points to this. There's something happening in our generation slash the generation right below ours that wants so badly to recapture the innocence of their youth that they are willing to throw money at anything that even gives them a hint of that feeling. You know what I mean? I think the reason that nostalgia and all of these – we're seeing movie remakes and television show remakes and everything's a remake of a remake and it's all mining years that were part of our collective youth. And I think it's because – there is this weird feeling among our generation that we just want to recapture that and we'll do anything to do it. And I don't know if that's healthy.
Yeah, we throw our whatever expendable income we have toward it where we couldn't when we were younger and didn't have anything to do that with when we were younger. And now it's here and now it's coming back and we get excited. But you're right in this sense, for sure. And I actually kind of totally agree with you 100%. But one of the points I would make is, what are the most successful Kickstarters, or what are many of them? And many of them are retro games being updated for a new generation or something. Books that have been out of print and the guy's bringing it back. A comic book series that the publisher let go of and now the artist has decided to sort of reboot it. I think you're right that a lot of what Kickstarter and other funding sites are doing is fueling that core nostalgia bug that people get. But I also think there's a kind of a weird peer pressure with it. And again, I'm not negative on this at all, and nor am I negative on, maybe this is just the economics of the future, and it's just the way these things are going to work from now on, and whatever gets kids to read, who cares where it comes from?
Agreed.
So all of that I agree with, and I'm not so sure it's cynical, I just think it's just the way it is. There is a weird kind of internet nerd peer pressure that kicks in. And people who have no connection to this, who would otherwise never give to literate children reading programs and things like that, are throwing money at it because of
the theme song.
Yeah. Yes. Honestly. And all their nerd peers are telling them they should.
I think that theme song stirs something in us.
Sure.
I truly believe it's that. And I don't mean to, again, it's a good thing ultimately, but I don't know. I think it points to something that's a little disturbing to me in a way.
Yeah. Thoughts, Brecky. What do you think, man?
Well, I have two perspectives on this. I mean, I never watched Reading Rainbow. Obviously, I'm the wrong generation, and well, I'm in the wrong country too. So for me, this is not a nostalgia thing. But I can't but help look at this and see that it's getting none of the negative criticism that we get every time there's we're going to reboot Transformers, or we're going to reboot the Ninja Turtles or something. People are just generally positive all around on this.
Do you think it's because you or us have now a direct hand in it, as opposed to we're rebooting Ninja Turtles? And oh no, Michael Bay sucks and he's going to ruin it. And oh no, what's her name's in it? Or, you know, there's a weird separation between us and the big money Hollywood, whereas this is a smaller layer between us and internet savvy, cultural savvy, and social network savvy LeVar Burton. And because of that relative closeness, that goes away more.
It could very well be. I mean, LeVar Burton is the second point on my list here. I'm just glad to see him do anything that isn't perception. Because that's been his only major thing since Star Trek, really. He's done almost nothing. He's shown up here and there on a couple of things, two episodes
of
Big Bang
Theory.
I'm sure
he does a lot of things around the house. We just don't.
I'm sure he does.
You're just not aware.
Probably.
Tom, you cap this off with, I want to know where your head's at with this whole thing.
Whenever I or anyone else says, I worry that this is a trend that's bad, like Jeff is saying, and I totally get where you're coming from, Jeff, and I think that's it's a fair acknowledgement. I always try to ask myself, is it new though, right? And it's hard in this situation because we haven't had Kickstarter for very long. So you can't go back and like, well, back in the 40s, Scott, Kickstarter was all about, you know, throwbacks to the Civil War.
In the heady days of early 09 is all you can really say.
Yeah, right? Sure. But I mean, I do think, okay, you think about in the 80s, there was a huge, huge wave of nostalgia for the 50s.
Yeah.
And everybody was buying, the Stray Cats were popular, but he was buying these 50s compilations. 50s oldies stations dominated the airwaves. And so I'm not sure that it's that unusual for any.
From the 50s.
Yeah.
President.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly, right? Oh, wait a minute. Does that mean like some actor from the 80s is going to be the next president? Anyway.
Oh my gosh, what have we heard?
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
President Bayo.
President Schwarzenegger.
Oh no, Bayo's better.
Not a citizen.
He's not the Charles in charge we want. He's the Charles in charge we need
in charge.
Yeah. Anyway.
So I feel like, well, this isn't, you know, every generation goes through their nostalgia phase. So the question to me becomes, is it more intense somehow? And are we more of a navel gazing, or is it just kind of the normal process of aging where everybody wants to recapture that youth?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a hard call, but you know what? Again, the bottom line for me is, there is the larger question Jeff's asking, and it is a larger question, and it's a question about where are we going culturally? What does this all mean? But then there is the temporary bit, which is, well, all right, well, this one flash in the pan is going to be good for kids regardless. Yeah. We hope. They need to, you know, one thing I need them to show with this money is not just, hey, we made a cool site. I want to know that there's a plan for injection into school systems and getting it in front of administrators so they can see the value, getting it in front of parents. How are they going to market this? That kind of stuff's as important, maybe more important, given the level of noise out there trying to get everyone's attention. So that's as important to me as the actual content of the app or the program or the whatever they're going to do. So we'll see, I guess. I suppose we'll see.
I'll tell you where we're going next, though. Immediately, we're going to Mike P. Kennedy's story. He submitted this one to currentgeek.reddit.com. The first game made using the Unreal Engine 4 development toolset, the one that requires no knowledge of programming, is out. They're making it available free as a demonstration. An artist named Sean Coddle used a simplified scripting system called Blueprints, and Coddle designed the gameplay loop in an evening, spent about a week working on the menus and doing some bug squashing. The game is also derivative called Tappy Chicken.
Oh, geez, Tappy Chicken. You know, if I just say to myself, you know what we need? We need a new Flappy Bird game, a kind of ripoff game. I think that'd be great. We don't have, there's not
the
any of those.
Flappy Bird ripoff you wanted.
I don't
Ladies
know.
Ladies and
man.
Gentlemen, Flappy Bayo.
See? Oh, that deserves a stinger. Flappy Bayo. There you go. I feel like this is fine in the sense that we do need to see some practical demonstration of this toolkit. When I heard it announced, or when it was announced, I was super stoked about it. The idea that a guy like me who can do the visual and can deal with all the graphic stuff that you work with in games, but is a terrible programmer and only knows very, very basic things. How cool would it be for me to realize a couple of simple game ideas I have that I don't even need to publish necessarily. I just want to screw around and show it to my friends and stuff. And, you know, having Unreal moving in this direction and saying, yeah, we've got, you know, the best engine and the most amazing effects and next gen systems and PCs are going to blow your mind in the next couple of years. That's all well and good, and keep on doing that in the ever more competitive area of engine making. But how cool is it that they do this little extra thing? What do you think, Jeff?
I am going to be on the complete opposite side of the spectrum from where I was in the last topic. And I think this is the greatest thing. There's no cynicism on this from me at all. I was literally just moments before we started recording this, I was at a barbecue that a bunch of game designer friends were throwing at their house. Many of them have children. And the one thing we kept talking about was their the common experience they've had playing with their children, playing Minecraft. Mm. And there is an entire generation of kids that are just the perfect age, have fallen in love with Minecraft, and more than that, have fallen in love with creating things in Minecraft. And the fact that the toolkits that are professional level now, that are that like CryEngine and Unreal 4, that really have completely eliminated the barrier to entry. There's going to be an entire generation of these kids that are just engrossed in Minecraft that are going to transition seamlessly into creating amazing content, and they're going to be able to do it without having to know a lot of really complicated programming languages and maths. And we are going to see a true golden age of game development. That's my prediction. In the next few years, these kids that are like 10 and 11 right now, when they become like 18, 19, 20, 21, you're going to see amazing stuff.
Well, one way or the other, whatever we end up seeing, here's my prediction is exactly yours, except I think we're all going to be grumpy about it. Like those of us who grew up on carefully crafted, narrative driven, linear type experiences, World of Warcraft, where it's, you know, great and open and cool, but it's built for us to play in. It's not a thing we get to build ourselves. I think this Minecraft generation is going to make games that make you and me and Tom and others grumpy in our old age. We're going to be like, well, that's not, what fun is that? That's just you building a thing. Like we're, it's weird because I can appreciate it. And I love what Minecraft, like my son is completely into it. Cannot get enough of Minecraft. He is one of that generation you're talking about. And it inspires him. I wouldn't be surprised if he went into some field where he could create games or do something because he wants to. And it's all because that game is so influential. But he's not interested in any of my story-driven stuff. He doesn't care about any of that other thing. I worry a little bit that that generation of gamers and game makers, future game makers, are going to make stuff that we're all going to think it was better in our day.
Scott, isn't the idea of the Unreal Engine that you don't have to worry about the building? You can just go right into the story?
Correct,
so,
yeah.
Theoretically, it would surface better stories.
I agree. Plus, these things tend to be cyclical. So if you swing real hard the other way, then it comes back just as hard to support narrative and other things. And my prediction's probably off by a large degree, but I still think there's going to be Minecraft's impact is seismic. And we don't even know yet that kind of impact that it's going to have, like Quake-like impact, the way Quake had an impact on kids in the 90s, the way that Super Mario Brothers did in the 80s, or whatever one you want to pick and choose out of the sky. Minecraft, maybe more than all of them, is going to be one of the most seismic influences ever on girls, on boys of a generation of a certain age. And I think, and Jeff's 100% right about that. Whether or not I will like what they make, I don't know.
In 20 years, will you back the Minecraft nostalgia Kickstarter?
Yeah.
I think I very well might. And to follow on Scott's point there, I think we're already beginning to see the Minecraft generation beginning to appear in other things. I mean, just look at EverQuest Next and the entire Landmark thing that they have. That's basically putting Minecraft inside an MMO.
Yeah.
Or the basic idea of Minecraft inside an MMO.
Yeah.
And I just think we're going to start seeing more of this in other games.
And from a game,
we're going to get.
Oh, go ahead.
We're
going
to get to the point where create. I mean, it used to be to create a movie, you had to have knowledge of photography, and that doesn't exist anymore. I mean, you know, cinematographers still benefit from a knowledge of photography, but the technological know-how has separated from artistic creativity and allows people who don't have that know-how to still create these kinds of wonderful stories.
Right.
I think the same thing is going to happen with video games, and it's already happening, and it's going to only get easier. Artists will be drawn to that medium without necessarily being interested in programming per se.
Yeah, and not to sound like it's 2006 all up in here, but I mean, what is podcasting if not a user-generated radio show? It's right. Kind of the same pattern, and I agree with you. Everything is kind of moving that way. So even your narrative-driven stories where we want to hear a amazing writer tell us a tale and have us interact in that world, I think even those worlds will have more, the player will have more to say and do within that world, and a lot of that means make stuff up. So yeah, it's going to be amazing. I can't wait for whatever our future overlord children are going to do for us.
And in case people didn't realize it, Unreal Engine 4 cost you $19. And if you put out a video game made on it that you sell, there's a profit sharing part of that as well with Unreal, but $19.
They're smart to do this. They're really smart to do this.
It's crazy right now. If you log into Steam, literally one of the major ads that you're going to get served to you on Steam is CryEngine.
Yep.
An ad delivered to every person that logs into Steam. So they're literally marketing an engine, a game engine, to average users, and it's $10.
Yeah, their world's about to change in a big, big way, though, because like Unity has just kind of come in and kicked everybody in the nuts and run away a little bit because they're super cheap. Their tools have come a long way. You're seeing a lot of really, really nice production value from the Unity engine, and it's kind of forced these other guys to go, well, shoot, I guess we can't just do the $1.5 million licensing anymore. And, you know, id's not even in the picture with it anymore. They're not even doing anything with EdTech 5 or whatever. There's maybe one or two games in development that use EdTech 5. So yeah, there's, you know, Crytek and Unreal, they got to start getting smart about where everything is where the long tail is on this. And I think these are good steps, right? I don't know what CryEngine's trying to do with that, with advertising and stuff. And I know they've got some entry-level things, but it's nice to see them reacting to the market instead of, you know,
$10.
Yeah, big deal. $10.
They're like, we're $9 cheaper.
Yeah.
Boom.
Take that. Make your own Crysis sequel.
Cry Havoc.
The dogs, something of war.
Let's slip $10.
There you go. Let's slip $10. There you go. Perfect.
Scott, you found this infographic on Geek Girls about 18 things you didn't know about Firefly is their title, which is a very bold statement given how much many brown coats know about Firefly. There were a couple things in here I didn't know. Some of them I did.
Well, you're a huge fan. So which ones did you do? Like, I didn't know that the derelict ship in the episode Bushwhacked was originally a Power Ranger set. Who would know that? That's crazy.
Nor did I know that Vera, which is Jane's favorite gun, was built for the film Showtime with Robert De Niro and Eddie Murphy.
Terrible movie, too.
My biggest surprise on this list is that Scott was browsing Geek Girls for some reason.
No, I got someone sent this to me or something, and then it all kind of went from there. Yeah, because you know, Geek Girls are great. What are you talking about? there's a bunch of stuff in here. I assume we're all fans. Zac Efron, here's a good one for you. Here's one for the kids. Zac Efron made his TV debut as a young Simon Tam because of Firefly. Zac Efron wanted to be a teen idol on the High School Musical. We're not sure that's a good thing or a bad thing. So they kind of even editorialize in this chart a little bit about poor Zac Efron. But yeah, there's good stuff in here. It's really cool.
He's dreamy.
Yeah.
I knew about Melfina. I didn't realize how many similarities there were to River Tam. Hmm. Makes me want to watch Melfina now.
Why don't you do that? How's this for a stat? Body count in Firefly, the show Firefly, there were 77 deaths during the run of the entire season of that show. The one season we got, which is still a crime. Serenity, the film, which I've seen 19 times now, which is another nice statistic. 74 people died in that movie alone. So really amped up the old mortality rate there.
Don't got to be on primetime TV.
So you've seen 1,406 deaths in Serenity.
Yeah, very good. Look at you, math man, up there in the cold wastes of Switzerland or Sweden, rather. It's amazing.
Oh, God. Sweden.
I don't want to. You guys don't get along, right? Isn't there kind of a little argument?
Well, the Swiss are neutral about it. But Sweden.
Yeah. So are we. So it's, you know, it's cold stares.
You both got Nazi money. It's fine. Whatever you need to do. Anyway, that's a cool thing. We'll have it linked in the show notes. If you guys want to look at it at home, you surely can check it out.
I spent about a half hour on this next one here. History professor Maggie Green purchased a Chinese picture story booklet. There's a Chinese word for it that I'm not going to attempt, but it's a fairly common thing. There's tons of them at book fairs. She was at the Shanghai Book Fair and was looking for opera-based ones and was pointed to one that actually had the Star Wars story. It was made in 1980. Among the weirdness in here, the spacesuits looked Soviet. Darth Vader is pacing at one point before a map that looks like the map from the Death Star, but it says Kennedy Space Center at the bottom of it. There's also a picture of Vader in front of what I'm pretty sure is a Triceratops. Yeah. Chewbacca's look changes. Sometimes he looks like Chewbacca. Sometimes he looks like a chimp. Yeah. The stormtroopers often look like Boba Fett. It's really, really weird. I put a couple of links to two because she has four PDFs covering the whole book up at her site at mcgreene.org. It is a trip. Yeah. I really wish I could read Chinese too.
It's ironic since these are all kind of twisted versions of familiar characters, or they're kind of not quite right. And you referred to him as Darth Vader. I think that's fantastic. In fact, if I could go back and change the movies, go back in time and say, George, what are you doing? Let's change the name of Lord Vader to Lord Vader. How much cooler is Vader? Right? No? Darth Vader. Okay, I guess not.
I'm actually pretty impressed with the likeness of a lot of these characters. I mean, Han Solo, Chewie, and Obi-Wan, they all look very much the same.
Sometimes.
In a lot of these. Yeah, sometimes.
Sometimes, exactly.
I think, honestly, it looks to me like there were about 12 different people that they got to draw. Like, one person got one panel, and some, you know, they had a screening of Star Wars and only six of them got to show up to that. And the other six people who were drawing it just had to do it from what they thought it might look like from the description.
Yeah.
And so the people that actually saw the movie draw it accurately. But in another panel, who knows? Catch as catch can.
It's funny.
I think it's generous to even think that anybody saw the movie. Yeah. I think some people were working from like souvenir books.
Oh, maybe.
Possibly.
Yeah.
Old but photos. There are some that it's like extremely accurate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then another panel, it'll just be like that same character. Who doesn't look anything like there's a Han Solo that doesn't look anything like him.
Some of them look like they're taken right out of the comic, out of the Marvel comic.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which makes me think maybe they had like one guy had that.
I would like to submit one tiny possibility that I don't see mentioned anywhere in this stuff. And that is that when I was in college and we had a graphic design course where one of our things to do was the entire class had to jointly create a comic book, and every artist in the room did a panel in the book. So at the end of the thing, it was like 45 panels. Long is all, and we had to tell this sort of linear story that was already written for us. We knew what our panel had to be, but we had to kind of come up with what should be in that panel. I wonder if it's something like that. Huh. You know, if they were, if they meant to say, look at the diversity of art in here, and some of them have more knowledge of Star Wars than others, and you know, hard to say. And I don't see that written anywhere here, or any of this translation would lead to that. But this reminds me exactly of that project.
Well, it may not have been intentional, but it may have been exactly that.
Yeah, I mean, right. The end result is the same. And I got to say, one of the funnest things we ever did in that class was that project. It was a blast.
I'm looking through the panels on this right now, and the fourth from final panel shows what I think is supposed to be Luke and Han Solo,
right.
You know, standing close together. One of them is waving and so on. But I can't but help think that one of them looks like Kyle MacLachlan and the other one looks like Richard Branson.
Yeah. So you're saying time travel is real?
Yeah.
I'm saying it's a genuine possibility at this point.
And Virgin Galactic figured it out.
Yes. I like the one where I think the Death Star is in the air, but there's people in like suits with ties pointing in the sky.
And the cool kind of buffness of Obi-Wan Kenobi is just kind of something to behold. And these sand people, I don't know what's going on there. It's really
it
cool.
Like Aztecs.
I love that this exists. It's really rad.
Anyway. Check it out. MC Green, that's with an E at the end, .org.
You guys ever seen those? Have you seen those YouTube videos where the 4-year-old girl will describe, she just watched Star Wars and the dad says, tell me the story. And she tries to say it.
Yeah. Yes.
This is the visual equivalent of that.
Really is.
Yeah.
It really is.
It's really cool.
Maybe they got to see it in Hong Kong and then were ferried back across the border quickly. Because this was 1980, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Our final top talk for today, Smooth Food, a German project, how could it not be, to make better meals for the elderly and sufferers of dysphagia, which is an inability to swallow. So you take freshly cooked ingredients, things like chicken, you pulp it into baby food, and then you use the FoodJet 3D printer to print it back in the same form that it had before you pulped it.
Yeah.
It looks and tastes the same, allegedly, but then melts in your mouth without having to be chewed. So you can do cauliflower, peas, chicken, pork, potatoes, and pasta.
Jeff, this really tickled you over there. What do you think?
The description is gold.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
It is someone describing the worst thing as if it's the best thing.
I know. I don't ever want to be.
All you have to do is use the FoodJet 1000 to pre-chew your food, reassemble it in its original form, and then you don't have to do any of that pesky chewing.
Yeah.
Do you have dysphagia?
It'll
tired of bland, tasteless food?
Now, while I keep picturing like a fully formed sandwich, that's wrong of me, right? It should be all just separate things like a potato or whatever.
Well, they'll get there.
Okay. Yeah. I'm just trying to imagine a pre-pulped sandwich.
The technology is young. You can pulp the bread, then print it back as bread, pulp the salami, print it back as salami.
But I love the idea of putting something that looks like something in your mouth and it just loses all of its structural integrity in your mouth.
The article doesn't make it sound all that more interesting either. It says it's mixed with a secret additive mixed and then regurgitated by a modified FoodJet 3D printer. Yeah, I don't want to eat something like that's been regurgitated.
Can we all agree the people making the food jet need to come up with a better name for their device?
Yes. I think so, too.
Do not call it the food jet.
Yeah, that's the bad.
I don't know, I like the space age idea of food jetting right into your mouth.
It's the world of tomorrow today.
If only.
The world of tomorrow.
I wonder, though, is it going to hold? I mean, it's on the plate, let's say, before grandma gets it, and you're bringing it over to her. And it's holding integrity, I suppose, but any one jerk in one direction or another, is the whole thing just go like a souffle?
No, I think the saliva is what breaks it down because it dissolves the additive.
Oh, that's even worse.
Isn't that appetizing?
No. No, it's not. But that does it for our top stories. Thank you guys for enjoying those because I know I did. Real quick here, a mention of Nerdtacular. We are literally down to a handful of tickets. If you're coming in July or you're planning on it, you still have about a month and a week, and there is still a couple of tickets left. The Double Kick Clicks are playing. Tom's going to be there. Veronica Belmont's going to be there. I'm going to be there, of course. We have other music stuff planned. We have multiple panels, podcasting, comics, and more. It's going to be fantastic. Beautiful snowbird resort. Nerdtacular.com is the place to go to get your tickets. Get them now before they're gone. All right?
You can just hang out in the lobby, not move, and have conversations with Brian Ibbett, Justin Robert Young, Ice Swarm.
Brian Brushwood
will
be there.
It's like living inside of Frog Pants.
Right. If you want to be in and around this weird family and extended family we have, then this is the place, and it's going to be awesome. A big game room. We're going to have board games, tabletop, like the whole weekend that's going on. It's going to be fantastic. Cryptozoic will be there showing off their stuff, people running games. It's going to be so good. So be there. It's nerdtacular.com.
In case you missed a look at one of the best-dressed beauties of the early 20s, here's another look at her. Had enough?
I have. Let's get to the main stuff. Talk about this Code Conference and what happened there with Sergey Brin.
Yeah, so Code Conference goes on. It used to be called the D Conference when All Things D ran it, but then everybody left All Things D to start Recode, so now it's called the Code Conference. They get big wigs to come in. Sergey Brin, co-founder of Google, was there. And one of the things he showed off was a video of their self-driving car that does not have a steering wheel, doesn't have any controls whatsoever, and just drives itself. There is an emergency stop button, but that's the only safety feature for the driver. And he claims, like, this is actually going to be safer than having cars driven by people.
Okay, so emergency stop
powered
button.
By screams.
Yes, powered by the screams of its victims. Exactly. So I feel like this is, we were talking earlier about a thing that divides a generation. I feel like Minecraft is one for gamers, and there's other things like this. I feel like this is definitely one of those, because I am resisting it, but a part of me, and Tom, we talked about this on the morning show when we first mentioned this, part of me is like terrified at the idea that I don't have some kind of manual override. I need to be able to I got to be able to have that as a backup. I feel like there's a generation of kids who don't care.
I feel that way on jet airplanes, Scott. Like, who is this person flying it? I need to have a manual override.
Well,
that's a great point.
But that is a good point, but it's also not, what if that was a robot flying your plane? How would you feel
it
then?
Is. Well, is it? You think the pilots are flying the plane?
No, but they can take control if they need to. So that pilot...
Also, I mean, when you're up in the sky and somebody's flying an airplane, there's not 20,000 other people flying airplanes all around you, some of them drunk or some of them disorderly or some of them driving huge
trucks.
That's
why you take it away from everyone. Everybody out of the pool. That's what I say.
All right.
The carpool.
Exactly. I said a snarky comment at the beginning of this about being powered by screams, but I am on board with this. I truly believe to the very core of my being that our children and our children's children are going to look back on human-operated automobiles like we look back on leeches in medicine from the Middle Ages. They're going to look back on it and go, you let human beings drive cars? How many people died a year? And we'd be like, well, a lot, actually, a hell of a lot. And they're like, of course, because humans are fallible. Yeah. Why would you ever let them do that? And we're going to be like, well, we thought it was better. We wanted to have control and we're idiots.
You know,
I think that I want no human being involved at any point in driving a car, I think it will be more efficient, extremely safer. It's gonna change the world and be better for everybody. We'll get where we're going quicker. We won't be stressed out nearly as much. There's very little downside here.
We won't be buying a $30,000 car every 10 years or less and worrying right. about payments. Yeah, no, I'm with you on all of these things, but there is gonna be this period, dude, where
exactly
the three astronauts have to die in that capsule before we can learn how to do this right moment for cars, where a bunch of people are gonna die. It's gonna be a mess. Like the
how many
sacrifices
people die every day in cars.
I know, it's a good point.
As I was talking, someone died in a car.
I know. It's true. But do they have to look like smiley little Pixar cars? Can we get better than that, Google?
No, I agree with you. The design Google is never good at design. No one wants to jump in that. That looks like something that wants to kill me with a smile on its face. That's bad. Yes.
I will drive for you, Jeff.
Yeah.
Like a weird Disney ride or something. Brecky, how do you feel? I mean, in some ways I feel like you guys, where my sister's moving, by the way, she's moving to your town of her neck of the woods for 2 years straight.
Hey, nice.
She's excited because she thinks you guys have a lot of things right, like your healthcare system and mm-hmm. your internet infrastructure and other cool things that you guys have decided to go ahead and put into place. How do you feel? Right. How does that part of the world feel about cars that are this autonomous and do not need human interaction to work?
Well, I don't know. There's not a lot of public opinion here. My personal opinion, however, is it's a really good idea if we can switch everybody over at the same time. Because I don't see one of these driving down the road at 25 miles per hour and then a massive truck driving past it or, you know, attempting to change lanes or whatever. And you don't have any control. You all you have is the stop and start button, really.
Yeah.
And I think there's going to be accidents when there's, you know, 5% of the cars out there are autonomous or automatic cars. There will be accidents and they will be a blocking point. They will be
caused by humans. They will be caused by the humans in the other cars.
In fact, the only accident in a self-driving car to date was caused by a human who had taken control of the car.
Well, yeah, but
I rest my case, Your Honor.
But how many? Hold on a minute, though. Percentage wise, how many cars are in circulation that are autonomously driving people around? One or two, maybe.
Yeah. Like,
no, but that's probably more than that. But you're right. No, yeah.
even if the accident is caused by the other person in the other car, people are going to say, "Well, if he hadn't been in an automatic car, he would have been able to stop. He would have been able to swerve. He would have been able to stop."
Yeah.
And this is going to cause opinion against these cars.
The guys over at Tested had a great podcast about this. Will Smith, Norman Chan, about why people even buy cars now, why we haven't already gotten to a place where better public transportation of various sorts aren't dominant. And the reason is there is still a cultural thing. I can only speak for my own country, but there's a cultural thing that says ownership is everything. You know, you accomplish something by then conquering it, owning it. It's now yours. Even if the bank is getting paid by you slowly or whatever, you still have this feeling that this is my Honda and I can put my Taco Bell wrappers where I want.
Truck nuts.
Yeah, like truck nuts. Exactly.
But you know what? Things are like that until they're not.
Yeah. But that's what I mean is there is not going to be a let's all do it at once, like Brecky is suggesting or wishing for. And I agree with you. If there's a way to just say, hey, guys, we're turning off the internet and then we're going to turn it back on. And when we do, it's going to be five times as fast. Like that makes sense, like with that infrastructure or other kinds of things in life. But changing out cars, there are still people driving cars built in the early 60s and will not let go of that thing until they die. And they're on the highway right now. Getting that all to switch over like that, that's monumental. It's already hard enough getting them to buy, you know, hybrids or electrics or whatever.
So that's not the same as to say that it won't happen.
No, I think it might.
You know, there are ways to ease that transition. It's all a matter of whether we want to actually, you know, mark off that lane for self-driving cars and eventually reverse that to where only people who are in self-driving cars get on most of the lanes and everybody who's driving their own car is stuck in the other lane. I mean, those transitions happen all the time in various ways.
All right. Well, some accidents are caused by people with different languages. So finally, Skype's come to the rescue. Tell me about that.
Yes, we could actually let Brecky speak in whatever language he wanted to if we were doing this over a future version of Skype, although it would mean we would hear everything twice because it stops down. But Skype can do on-the-fly translation. They've actually taken their speech-to-text, their text-to-speech, and their translation machinery and integrated it into Skype. It should be coming by the end of this year in beta. So I can speak in English. It can translate it to, say, German, and then send it to the person on the other side who can then respond in German, and then it'll translate it to me in English.
Yeah. The dream has come true, finally. Finally, we
can. Judging how well Siri understands me, this should work flawlessly.
Siri is made by Apple, not Microsoft. How does Cortana understand you? Cortana.
I'm excited. I have my Windows phone. I'm ready for 8.1. It just hasn't dropped yet. I'm so excited for that. But I just think it's hilarious. This, to me, is the equivalent of what you guys are talking about with the self-driving car. There is no oversight to when the conversation starts going off the rails. There's no third party going, oh, guys, you're totally misunderstanding each other.
Yeah,
No, he did not just insult your mother.
Yeah.
Oh boy, it's getting really bad now.
Maybe maybe it's this, the current state of things like you're describing, that scare me about the cars. Because maybe I'm just of the opinion that we haven't worked out all the kinks yet. And this is a good example of that. So when they showed this, and Tom, they showed it like in a video, right?
Well, no, they actually did a live demonstration.
Oh, it was
at
live.
Code conference.
Okay.
With a German employee.
Oh, wow. Well, then there's your problem. Germany. Just kidding. It's fine. Germany's great. We love those guys. But the point is this. If you're going to do real-time translation over the most popular VoIP thing in the world, everybody from kids to their grandparents uses this thing, that's kind of enormous. That's kind of a big deal when it comes to business and their other initiative, which is to sell that business version, that kind of pro version of Skype they're working on that they also announced recently. This all seems to coincide with that. If I could talk to German factories or Chinese factories I work with on stuff I do now, I have some of the worst communication problems with the people I have to work with when I talk to them in China.
It would make your Star Wars comic book seem so much more accurate.
They could explain it. They could say, oh, that's Han Sulu. He's a combination of Sulu.
He's the navigator fencing master of the Millennium Falcon.
I said
he looked like a chimp, not that he was a chimp.
Right. See, the possibilities are limitless. But like, so Brecky, you know how many languages?
Three.
Three. Okay. Because I knew you knew a bunch more than me and anyone else here probably. So tell us, what are the three? You know, English, obviously. What else?
Swedish and Icelandic.
All right. So Icelandic, which sounds completely crazy to me.
It's a moon language.
Yeah. But imagine, I mean, would this make people lazier? Would you have worked so hard to learn these languages? Would you have a cultural basis to have taught you this in school? Are you just like, Skype will do it.
Asks the guy who only knows one language. Will this make us lazier?
Well, I know zero languages.
I love that question.
Good point.
One of four people on the show who knows any other than one language.
I asked the wrong guy.
Possibly.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Please continue.
But you've got to talk to people who, you know, I don't know. Like, you know, you're so fluent in English that it's almost not fair. But for me to talk to anybody in Iceland who doesn't know English, that's a giant nightmare. It'd be so cool to be able to just call them up and talk to them, you know?
Sure. I mean, this is a huge step. I mean, the universal translator of Star Trek has always been, you know, a dream of mine. That and teleporters and matter replicators. I mean, it's one of the three major technologies that I want to see.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a good idea. And I just want to see the execution. I dread the execution because I think it's going to be horrible. Just look at Google Voice transcribing things and so on today.
Yeah. So
I would encourage folks to watch the demo because I felt exactly the same way before I actually watched it. I'm like, how good could this be? And I like you, Scott, thought it was just a pre-recorded video. Uh-huh. But when I watched it, I was like, oh, this is in real time. And there is, in fact, one place where it messes up, and it doesn't mess up horribly, but it's like, oh, okay. So it had one little glitch. But that just to me is like, okay, this is the real engine. They didn't cherry pick. They're having a real conversation, and it's really impressive.
Yeah. That's a step in the right direction. So
I'm just looking forward to seeing how it handles languages with very, very different grammars and syntaxes, like translating Japanese to Swedish, for example.
Or Farsi to Spanish or something crazy.
Right,
one
exactly.
thing that Satya Nadella mentioned, Satya Nadella is the CEO of Microsoft, that with their AI that they are using to do the translation, because they let the AI learn the language. Mm-hmm. It's not programmatic. And they said when they add a language, it gets better at the previous languages. And he used Japanese and Spanish as an example. He's like, it learned Spanish and got better at English. And then we added Japanese. It learned Japanese. It got better at Spanish and English.
Huh.
What I'm thinking about as you were saying that is when you said, when Satya Nadella said this, like, how does Skype know I'm using a proper name? It's going to attempt to think that I said Satya Nadella as, you know, something else, right?
Actually, one way they address that is you speak an entire phrase and then it translates the entire phrase or sentence. And so it's able to use the context and say,
awesome.
Okay, those are unidentified words. They're in the place that a proper name usually goes. Boom.
Wow. Yeah.
Also, Satya Nadella probably is in the dictionary for that. That's yeah. It's a Microsoft product.
Right.
Then again, if you say I'm going to go to John, is that the toilet or is that the person?
Yeah,
good John.
Yeah. No. Well, no one said that here in the States since the 70s. But I get your point.
Good point.
Yeah. I haven't heard.
Go meet Crapper.
Yeah.
I'm going to go hit the head.
Hit the head. There you go.
Punching someone.
Yeah.
Or exactly. Am I going to the back?
There's some nuance there for sure. All right. So Apple, the whole rumor was true. They bought Beats Electronics for $3 billion. And this is according to everybody in the know. There have been photos. It's all a real deal now. Dr. Dre is now a very rich man. so
soon will be.
Yeah. And they got the Beats Music service, which is a kind of an iTunes competitor, and it'll continue to run sort of independently. Isn't that right, Tom? They're not going to try to merge that stuff into iTunes or the other way around, I assume.
Well, as I always try to emphasize, because people do tend to forget, this means they've agreed to the purchase. It has to go through regulatory approval, and then it has to actually close. Anybody who's bought a house knows this. Like, yeah. I bought the house, but I don't get it until it closes. And they expect the deal to close in September. So nothing's happening for anybody yet.
Mm.
But yeah, the intention, according to Tim Cook, is to leave Beats Electronics working as an independent entity and leave the brand out there. Although the Beats Electronics people will be reporting into Phil Schiller, and the Beats Music people, the music streaming service, will be reporting into Eddie Q.
Interesting. So when they get up and on stage, is it next week that we get a conference from Apple?
Monday, Apple has its Worldwide Developers Conference. It'll be interesting to see if they bring the Beats folks up, because they're not officially part of the company yet.
Do you think Dre comes out and says, yo, yo,
yo? I would be surprised if they don't have him at least like wave from the audience or come up for a quick hello or something.
Sure. That's cool. All right.
I just still don't see the reason for this purchase. Why doesn't Apple just create their own music streaming service if that's why they bought it?
Well,
the only reason I can see, true. But I mean, Apple has the know-how. They have the people. They have the engineers. The only reason that I can see really is they want the people. They want Dr. Dre. They want Jimmy.
Yeah.
And they want those people to make the deals.
Yeah.
Part of the fall down of streaming services is not being able to get favorable deals for all the music that you want to include under the terms you want. Mm-hmm. Having the founder of Interscope Records, who speaks the language, and Dr. Dre go into your meeting gives you a big advantage in those deals.
Yeah. And not to be cynical, but it's easy to think, oh, well, Apple also admires any company who can build a $14 item in cost and sell it for $300. that has to be a thing. I mean, or at the very least, you look at the marketing team and go, what are they doing? Because that's impressive. Yeah.
Apple's looking at $1 billion in revenue out of Beats Electronics every year and going, well, this thing pays for itself in 3 years.
Yeah. Three to six years, you're done. So
wouldn't it be fun to time travel back to 1989 and go, you know this NWA album? Apple Computer. You heard Apple Computer doing real well in 1989. They're going to want this guy just to be able to go into meetings for them.
Yeah. Yeah. And not only that, I want to go back in time and say, you know that Ice Cube you got working for you there? Yeah. You know, the one that says F the police a lot on the record there? He's going to be in family movies in a few years. And, oh, that other guy, Ice-T, he's the kind of a competitor. He's got that Cop Killer album. He's going to play a cop on TV one day. Like, to me, this is the craziest flip ever. And Dre, I mean, it's awesome. It's amazing what he's done and where he's gone and where he's at. But you'd never predict any of this stuff. There's no way, man.
Not now that. With Apple.
Oh, my God.
Now with Apple.
That's crazy.
I think they got this company. I think they got Beats mainly for the people. I think they're going to put Jimmy Iovine in, music related strategy. He's going to be head of music related strategy, division of his own. And then they get Dr. Dre, put him on the retinue for, consultant for marketing purposes. Imagine when they release the iWatch, do a commercial with Dr. Dre and his friends. It's going to sell.
Yeah.
It's going to work.
Yeah, I agree.
Tom, do you believe for a second that this would have happened if Steve Jobs was still alive?
I don't know.
Well, let's say Steve Jobs is alive.
Steve Jobs was very famous for doing is saying nobody wants to watch video on an iPod and then a year later come out with the video iPod.
Yeah.
Right.
So this is the kind of thing that if it made sense to Steve Jobs suddenly, and he's like, yeah, this works, he would have totally done it.
He's also the same guy that said, when someone said, is Apple ever going to make a phone in 2006? And he said, I wouldn't get rid of your Palm Trios just yet. And then the next year they release the iPhone.
He's like, now you can get rid of
the Trio. But it's also, I feel like I always ask the same question, so I don't think it's a bad question, Jeff, at all. But if Steve Jobs was alive today and one of the other factors was in place, which is iTunes for the first year ever in the history of the service went down last year. Less songs bought last year than no other year they could say that about except last year.
And that's industry-wide for music purchases, not particularly
iTunes. But as they're a leader in that space, that means things are changing. They have to adapt to that. The Spotify's and RDO's and Pandora's of the world are kind of eating their lunch, and iTunes Radio is not what that needs to be to compete that way. I feel like maybe he would have been interested in this. And also, they sell a lot of Beats headphones at Apple stores, so there's a lot of existing revenue and other stuff. The more I've got my head around it, the more I think that I'm not so sure he wouldn't have, but it's hard. I mean, you know. Could have, should have, would have.
The thing is, this isn't one of those situations where you could say, well, the reason they bought Beats is this. No. There are many good reasons that come together. And I've heard a few people speculate, and I think this is probably right, that these two companies were talking about a partnership. And as they discussed, started to realize a merger made more sense.
Maybe Tim Cook just liked Dre's fat rhymes from the 90s. Maybe that's what this comes
down
to.
I think that's another element, Scott.
Could be.
He's a hip-hop fan. All right, it is time, ladies and gentlemen, for what we like to call the pop quiz.
America scores and wins.
All right, that means it's our guest's chance to be poised questions put in their face. They have to answer them, and Tom keeps score, and he does it with his gavel, he does it with his mind, and he does it with a little bit of magic, a little wizardry. The rules are this. If you get a question correct, I play this. If you get it wrong, and so you'll know how you're doing as we go. Tom will keep score. I'm warning you now. It's real weird how he does it. But
I'm terrified.
It's going to be great.
Can I be on record?
You are officially terrified. Well, you might want to be because it is about one of your favorite shows of all time. Perhaps still your favorite.
It is the best show ever, but I have not watched it in a long time, so I'm going to be rusty. I'm going to be real rusty.
Here it is. It's Married with Children. No, it's it's for the show The Shield, FX's original series The Shield, which aired early aughts and then ended in, what, 09 or something, 08, whatever.
Best show ever.
Yeah, it's really good. It's amazing. And none of these are too spoilery. I've gone through it, and it feels pretty good. So Tom, who's in the middle of that show, will not be spoiled. Here are your questions. Are you ready?
I suppose.
Here's your first question. What was the original title of the show before being changed to The Shield?
I think it was called it was named after the district that they're in. The real district in LA. I can't think of the name. where all the it's kind of the worst district in LA for gang crime.
It's The Barn. It's named after the place they worked. The Barn, they were going to call it. Sorry.
Did you mean Farmington?
Yeah. Well, I guess I was wrong either way.
All right. It's all right. Just get warmed up here.
0-1.
What is Shane Vandrell's badge number?
Oh, my God.
And I'll give you a hint. The reason it's significant or matters, it is the same number Joe Friday used on Dragnet. They did that as a little Easter egg in the show.
I do not know.
It is. The answer is 714, everybody. 714.
I'm terrible at this.
That's just so far. I don't know. I don't know how I'd do in here. What model
got a perfect score.
What model gun does Vic Mackey carry? What model gun does he carry? I will get, if you just get the brand, we'll give it to you.
Is it a Glock?
It is a Smith & Wesson model 4506-1, 45 caliber gun.
This is pretty brutal.
All right. Besides Vic Mackey, who is the only character to appear in every episode of the series?
Detective Wagenbach.
You are absolutely correct. Nicely done.
I did. I got one.
You got one, dude.
And pronounced Wagenbach well.
Yeah, he did.
So you get a bonus point for that.
See, you got an extra point. Nice done. What two episodes were rewritten to showcase Walter Goggins' acting ability so the network would hire him to be a regular cast member? Who would know this? But anyway.
The first two?
Our Gang and The Spread. Are those the first two? Does anyone know? Maybe? We'll give them that if someone can confirm that. All right, next up.
I'll check.
What is the... Thanks, man. What is the name of Vic Mackey's daughter?
Oh, crap. What is the name of his... It's his real-life daughter.
Ooh,
Scott?
Yeah.
I'm going to weigh in. Our Gang and The Spread were the first two non-pilot episodes... Mm-hmm. So we're going to give Jeff half point.
All right, half point. All right.
Half point.
Half point.
Like
that girl on Little House on the
Prairie. I don't know the name of his daughter.
All right, I'm going to give you...
It's his real-life daughter.
I'm going to give you... here. You're going to get one of each because the real-life daughter was a bonus point, and the name was Cassidy. But I feel like he should do okay with that.
You get a point for saying real life daughter. You also get a point for not knowing Cassidy, because come on.
All right, next up. What sticker can often be seen on the back of Vic Mackey's car?
Is it the strike team?
Man Cow, which is a Chicago-based radio show hosted by his by a friend of Michael Chiklis. It was like a little Easter eggy thing there as well. Okay. Final question. What condition was Vic's son Matthew diagnosed with?
Autism?
You are correct. Nicely done. Now, we're not scoring it yet. Hang on to your butts.
I thought the sticker was going to be, my other car is an ethical dilemma.
Nicely said. All right, Brecky, you ready for this, man?
I don't know. Am I?
You are doing comic book movies, all right?
Oh, okay. Sure.
I know. I knew Jeff was going to be like, damn it, that should have been my category.
You're doing single-digit math problems.
So here it is. For Brecky, the first question. In the 2011 Captain America movie, what clues Captain America off that something is up after being defrosted? Meaning, you know, that he's in the future now.
Well, the fact that there are neon signs everywhere and modern-looking cars.
He was at a baseball game being broadcast on the radio in the hall. Right. Or he was listening to it being broadcast in the hospital room. Close,
right,
though.
Sorry.
Reasonable things, though. I'm going to give you a half.
All right, half point for that. Whose voice was the inspiration for Tom Hardy's voice in Bane? And it's
I have no idea.
And that's, it's not...
I don't know.
It's not Deckard Cain from Diablo. incorrect. The answer is Bartley Gorman, an Irish-born knuckle boxer.
Oh, of course.
Bare-knuckle guy.
Yes, I've heard this before.
Classic
yes.
Gorman.
Your incorrect answer leads to a severe loss of a half point.
My punishment will be more severe.
More severe, all right. Okay, what video game does Tony Stark say somebody is playing on the helicarrier bridge in the Avengers? I know.
Space Invaders?
Oh, sorry, incorrect. I clicked ding because I knew it. It's Galaga.
Galaga.
I'm going to give you a quarter point for Scott knowing it.
Thank you.
Also, Space Invaders and Galaga, real close.
Yeah, pretty good.
I know.
Okay, you could argue, I guess.
How dare you?
They're both, you know, bottom side-to-side shoot-ups.
Galaga is the greatest shooter of that era, and Space Invaders is merely...
Is merely a stepping stone.
It's like a Cro-Magnon man. I know what you're saying.
It's a self-driving car accident leading to the accident-free future we all hope for. All right.
Absolutely.
Which is Galaga. All right, number next. What name does Justin Hammer give to a missile he is trying to sell to James Rhodes in Iron Man 2? I also remember this. Not much else about that movie. The answer is the ex-wife. Oh. Turned out to be a dud, by the way, which is kind of funny.
Brecky gets a point for not remembering a sexist answer.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Nicely done. That says a lot about you. Yeah, I like that. In The Dark Knight, Alfred tells Bruce a story about a man who stole jewels. He said he had a jewel the size of what fruit?
An apple.
That would be incorrect. A tangerine. This was his "Some Men Just Want to Watch the World Burn" speech.
Fruit. Had a jewel the size of a damn jewel.
Neither of us did a very good Michael Caine there at all.
I don't even know what that was. It was Sean Connery.
Very bad. All right. Next up, in what country does Bruce Wayne meet Henry Duckard and begin his training? Meaning, what's his name from Taken? Liam Neeson.
Yeah. He's in...
He taught him a very special set of skills. Sorry, go ahead.
Very special set of skills. Is he in Nepal?
You are incorrect. It's Bhutan. But I don't know where that is, so...
But you do get a half point for the credible Liam Neeson impersonation.
Yeah, that was pretty good. Now, hide under the bed. Now they're going to take you. All right, next up. Captain America does not get many pop culture references. In The Avengers, which reference does he get? Like, it was the big surprise that he actually got the reference. I remember this.
I remember him getting it, but I don't remember what it was.
Yeah. Me neither.
It is Flying Monkeys from The Wizard of Oz. Oh. You got that one. Final question. Alfred tells Bruce while he was gone, he would take a trip to France. He would order what drink at a cafe there? This is in the third movie.
Gin and tonic?
Incorrect. It is a Fernet Branca.
You're going to lose a quarter point for saying gin and tonic about France. Come on.
How dare you?
Obviously, English drink, Brucky.
All right. Now the fun begins, which is Tom figuring out who the hell got what score and how. So, Tom, how'd they do?
So Brecky ended up with 1.5 points, but nudging right in front of him, Jeff Cannata with 5.5 points.
Look at that, dude. Jeff, way to go. It's not about...
Congratulations.
It's not about who took first. It's about who took first the furthest away from the other guy who took first or something like that.
It's not about who took first. It's about this is like Little League soccer and we all get trophies.
That's right.
It's not about who won unless it's me.
Well said, Brecky.
Well,
you
said
get
indeed.
4 points for that. Now
they're tied. Great. Everyone gets a trophy. All right. It is time to do what we like to call forecast.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
It used to be a show. It is now a segment. And it's actually a show that Jeff has been on before. Way back in the day, we had Jeff on with Garnett Lee, I believe.
Has my prediction come to pass yet?
I don't remember what your prediction was.
I'm pretty sure it was that this would happen.
That this show would happen? It might have been.
I'm looking it up in the show notes. Jeff says, I predict in 5 years I will be on a show called Current Geek where forecast will become a segment.
Hey.
Nailed it.
All right. Way to go. Guess we can
I'll
just
be guesting opposite Brecky Thomason, whoever that is.
Yeah, whoever that guy is.
And he spelled it right.
Wow. And regurgitated food will be a topic.
The heady days of 2010. All right. Suggestion came this week for our forecast from Brecky, actually. It's about our first self-driving taxi services. Maybe this is a gateway drug to the self-driving cars. For like pizza delivery will be a normal thing and we'll have it by the year 2020. So they'll start with things like services like this, right? Brecky, is that kind of your idea? They'd start with a pizza and then move to, you know, the technology would just grow from there?
Right. And probably for major metropolitan areas. So it doesn't have to go out on highways or anything. I mean, downtown Manhattan pizza delivery, for example, could be an automatic service. You walk up to the car, you show your phone that has a QR code on it, it opens the slot, and there's your pizza.
Oh, wow. Like that. I figured you meant like I'm at home, I call it in, I want Domino's and a car with nobody in it. Pulls up to my driveway and goes, meep, meep. I go out and get a hot pipe
and then I get a free car.
Right.
I mean, let's assume for a minute those things are, you know, well, maybe not quite like, what's his name in the Winter Soldier.
Johnny Cab.
Yeah, no, okay, like Johnny Cab. Okay, Johnny
Yes.
Cab. So the guy pulls up, he honks, you go out, a little thing in the front goes and opens up, you put in your credit card and there's your pizza. That seems like an okay thing. I'd be all right with that.
Sure. Could also work for taxi services. You know, it's 2 o'clock a.m. You're slightly drunk. You don't want to drive home. You pick up your phone, you press a button, and up pops a self-driving car, takes you home.
Okay. All with Johnny.
I think that one's very likely to be one of the first uses of self-driving cars.
So. Yeah.
Once they hit
Just
the road.
Simple shuttle services, like an extension to the already existent public service.
How about like small bike-like machines that would, you know, run around San Francisco, and deliver documents and things like that, like they do now with what are those guys called?
Couriers.
Yeah. They'll seem good.
Well, Uber has already said that they can't wait to save money by replacing drivers.
Right.
Well, and Amazon kind of has that idea too, right? With their drone idea, anyway. Drone pizzas.
Taxi driver unions in the UK are already protesting.
Calling it now, drone pizzas. That's how these are going to come. We're going to get a box through the air. We're going to drop it down. I mean, I was kind of not a believer in this whole quadcopter thing. Like that leads to all these ideas and this drone technology and stuff. But after seeing some video of somebody messing around with a $300 drone or a $300 quadcopter, and the kind of video they're taking and the kind of control they have, I'm now kind of a believer that that's a thing in a lot more ways than just, hey, look at these cool shots of the Grand Canyon. I think that that may be a future transportation mode. Like, check this out. Look at my prediction. No self-driving cars, self-driving quadcopters. That's what I'm saying.
You just step out on your front porch and it comes down and grabs you and then carries you wherever you
well,
need
I'm
to go.
I'm hoping you got a, I mean, big enough to sit in, but you know, you just call one, it would come. They'd all be automated, so they wouldn't, you know, the traffic in the air would be no big deal because they,
you know, if self-driving cars don't catch on, I feel like that's the best bet for it happening, where they're like, actually, we just don't need to use roads. Why would we do that?
Yeah.
Where we're going.
Ah, see?
You don't need roads.
I wondered who was going to Doc Brown on us today.
That because I want to trademark the name Ornithopter as soon as possible.
Nicely said. All right.
I need it to be like Johnny Cab, guys. I need it to be like Johnny Cab.
I kind of feel like that.
How did I get in this cab?
Blue, too. Yeah.
The door opened.
I kind of feel like in. I feel like we need the analogs. Like, we've done this always with technology. There's always, you know, we don't have some weird abstract construct on our computers. We have things called desktops and folders and files, and they all have analog connections to old paper and pen ways of doing things. So Johnny Cab is just like that. It's just a, it's a dude that makes you feel a little better about it all because he's anamorphic and he looks like a guy and he can sit in the thing. And I don't know, like, to me, that's a totally, I mean, you love Johnny Cab and that's your, you kind of have a problem because you love Johnny Cab, right? But I'm saying your idea has real merit. There's real merit to it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Is it got Tom Merritt?
Yeah, Tom Merritt, of course, said thank you. Let's see. We're going to do a quick email here. We got one from, he's on Twitter, at Ethan Kane is his name. He says, hello, Frog Pants All-Stars. Last week, you mentioned building acronyms to match up with specific words. These are known as contrived acronyms. This below article is full of different ones. We've talked about this.
Is that the, that's the best name they could get for contrived acronyms?
It should be CAs, wouldn't it? I don't know.
Cause.
So here it is right here. They're going to give some examples of it. FCUK stands for French Connection United Kingdom. US Patriot, Can Spam, CAPTCHA, and ACT UP. These are like CAPTCHA, they're saying, for example, is a, is an example of a contrived acronym. And that a true acronym is nothing like that.
I like
this come from SHIELD, from talking about Agents of SHIELD.
Oh.
Because that's got to be the most contrived of the contrived acronyms.
Oh, for sure.
Ever.
Yeah. Plus writing it sucks because it's all caps and has periods and it's just a pain.
Well, you're saying this, but obviously we're right here on the Figure Rocket Obvious Grinding Pressure Assembly Novelty Technology Spooky Network.
Obviously.
Wow, dude. How'd you do that? That's amazing.
Acronymmaker.com.
Oh, all right.
Acronymmaker.com.
Write that down. Yeah,
with a hyphen in the middle.
The U.S. Congress probably hits that site several hundred times a day.
Yeah.
I think so. That was Frog Pants, by the way.
So I'm trying to find, let's see, I'm trying to find an example of a good one. And this thing is weird about not giving you examples of good ones. Well, anyway, whatever.
I like macronyms where one of the letters stands for the acronym itself.
Right.
Like GNU.
Oh, like I see what you mean. Like scuba, right? No, not scuba. How about laser? Did you guys know laser is an acronym?
Light yes. amplified through simulated emission of radiation.
All right, listen, Sweden. Enough of your smart.
And then recursive acronyms are even better, like GNU, which stands for GNU is not Unix.
Yeah.
Where you have the acronym inside.
Yeah.
Do you guys know TASER is one? I didn't know that. TASER stands for Thomas A. Swift's Electric Rifle.
Oh, right.
That guy's awesome.
Yeah.
That guy built himself. That's awesome.
Oh, this one's going to blow your mind. Nabisco is National Biscuit Company. It makes perfect sense now.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Bis for biscuit. And that's,
that doesn't count as an acronym, does it?
It does. It's just one of the two types.
Oh, it's
so okay. There's two types. Like AIDS would be a type, for example, or NATO. Uh-huh. Interpol, Nabisco, Gestapo. These are ones that are these are pronounced as words, it says. It's very interesting.
Megacore.
Yeah.
My podcasting network, Psycon, is Committee for the Surrealist Investigation of Claims of the Normal.
Oh, wow.
Psycon.
FAC, SQL, SAT. These are all another version of that where the three letters actually make a pronounceable thing. And then you have ones where pronounced as a combination and also spelled out. CD-ROM, for example, or JPEG. I love this kind of crap. So take that, Siri. See if you can figure that out and make the world understand you.
And then what Brecky did with Frog Pants earlier is called a backronym.
Backronym.
Yeah. Really?
Where you take a word and backwards. You turn it, you force an acronym.
Oh. So like, is that when they reverse engineer it? Like, we want the word penis to be the thing, but we need to come up with words for all the letters.
The backronym for it.
Oh, backdoor. Got it. Backronym. Go back. Got it. All right.
So Lisa, the app Lisa.
Surrender.
What? I missed that because all three of you said something.
I'm not proud of myself.
What'd you say? Say it again.
No, you can't. You've missed the moment.
Oh, all right. Well, on that note, we'd like to encourage all of you out there to send us emails and send us cool things like this. We love that stuff. It's currentgeek@gmail.com. Thanks a lot, Anthony. We appreciate it. That's going to do it, I think, for the show today. Before we go, want to give big thanks to our guests and give them a chance to kind of tell people what they've got going on. So, Jeff, what is going on, man? Where can people find more Jeff?
I don't want this to end, guys.
It's fun, right?
It's too much fun.
Too much fun.
Yeah.
But if you would like to see more of my stuff, you can do so. I do a weekly video game podcast on the 5x5 network called DLC. Scott has graciously appeared on that show. It is 5x5.tv/DLC. Also, I do reviews of movies and all kinds of stuff on my YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/KanataJeff. That's with two N's and one T. Yeah. Also, you can follow me on Twitter, Jeff Kanata. JeffKanata.com is also a place where stuff happens. And I just did an audiobook. I would love for people to check that out too. It's called Traveling in Space. I didn't write it, but I read it. And it's on audible.com and iTunes.
It's really good.
You could have Jeff Kanata in your ears, people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Making lots of silly voices.
And DLC is really good. If you're a gamer and you like really good discussion about games and stuff, him and Spicer are nailing it. It's really good.
Appreciate that.
Even that episode I was on, Jeff had the worst internet possible that day.
Oh, we got to have you back just to make up for that because we've solved those problems.
It's all fixed now. So anyways, yes, do check all that out. Brecky, where can people find you, man?
The SciCon Podcasting Network. That's CSICON.net. Otherwise, I'm on Twitter at Brecky T, BREKIT.
All right. Do that. He's a good man with a good cause. I don't know.
I do my best.
That's all right. It's in a book, Reading Rainbow. All right. What are we doing? Rainbow. We're getting out of here. This is going to do it. Oh, Tom, anything from you?
Just real quick, I want to mention that the Sword and Laser Anthology is now up as one of the items you can get in the worldbuilders.org store, which is Pat Rothfuss's charity that raises money for Heifer International. Heifer International is a charity that doesn't just give money. They give people like a goat and they teach them how to care for the goat and milk the goat, which gives the family milk. What?
Nothing. I'm being terrible. Go ahead. It's a great cause.
I want a goat.
I was saying, can I just have money?
Yeah.
Do I have to take the goat?
Yeah, but then you can. Well, then the thing is, you can have the goat have babies and sell the babies, or you can sell the milk and then you get the money, but you get to keep the goat. So yeah. That, you know, the idea is like, you give more than just money. You give the ability to make money and support your family.
Sure.
Anyway, worldbuilders.org. They have all kinds of really cool stuff in the store that helps raise money for that. And we donated a bunch of Sword and Laser anthologies there. There's also like, the advanced copy of Half a King by Joe Abercrombie in there. There's Name of the Wind playing cards in there if you're a fan. So check it out, worldbuilders.org.
Sounds good to me. Ace Detect on Twitter. And the only thing I would pimp, because that's what we call it, is pimping. Probably not a good term to use anymore, but whatever. Last time. You heard it here first. I said pimping for the last time. I'm going to pimp a show called The Diablo Show, which is up and available now. We are 6 episodes in. And I'm really, really enjoying it. And the listenership is booming. And I don't know why, but I'm super stoked that it is. And I hope people check it out. It's at frogpants.com/Diablo. And you can subscribe on iTunes. And if you're into that game at all, or even into sort of Blizzard generally, or you're waning on Warcraft or something like that, and you want to give something else a shot, I think it's a good place to go. That's going to do it for us. I think that's it. Am I missing anything? No. Thanks, Andrew Allen, for our theme music. We're on Twitter at Current Geek, Scott Johnson and Ace Detect. Don't forget Jeff Kanata and Brecky T. Current Geek at reddit.com is our Reddit, and currentgeek@gmail.com. The website is currentgeek.com. We'll see you next week.
Hello there, and welcome to another fine installment of This Week in Comics. I'm Aaron Steinberg, and I'm here to take you through the good, the bad, the new, and the noteworthy in the world of comics. As usual, my reviews may contain spoilers, so do proceed with caution. My pick of the week this week is a book I've been waiting oh so very long for, and that's Saga number 19. For those of you who have never heard of Saga, it's the latest series by Why the Last Man author Brian K. Vaughan and the extremely talented illustrator Fiona Staples. This issue continues the trend of slower pacing that we've seen in the past couple of issues, and for good reason. There is tons of amazing character development. We start to see the cracks form between Alana and Marco as they struggle to keep a low profile as wanted war criminals. The book was funny, heartwarming, and had a cliffhanger that hit me straight in the chest and really left me wanting the next issue in my hands. And hopefully I won't have to wait another 3 months for it. Despite constant delays, Saga continues to be my favorite title on my pull list. I give this issue an A- for taking me through the entire range of human emotion, and despite its slower pace, continues to feel exciting. For more frosting on your comic book cake, you can find me on the web at epiccomicshow.com or on Twitter at epiccomicshow. Until next time.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, the subject is litigation strategy and why Wizards of the Coast is suing Cryptozoic on a number of different intellectual property grounds. It was publicly announced last week that Wizards was suing Cryptozoic for infringement of IP relative to the iconic trading game Magic the Gathering. In short, Wizards believes that Cryptozoic's new video game TCG called Hex is an illegitimate copy of Magic that should be stopped. This week, let's focus on the threshold question many are asking. Why is Wizards suing Cryptozoic on so many different grounds? Wizards has three distinctive claims in the complaint, specifically patent, copyright, and trade dress infringement. Each of these three types of intellectual property provides a different scope of protection, and each has a different test or burden of proof that Wizards must meet to prove that Hex is infringing. Winning on any of these grounds will likely be fatal to Cryptozoic's game. In addition, IP rights do not last forever. The patent that Wizards is suing over is set to expire in June 2014. While the patent may have the best chance of obtaining profits and damages from Cryptozoic, the rights of Wizards to stop Hex from future sales based on patent rights will be moot in just over a month. The copyright and trade dress actions are not based on soon-to-expire IP, so these items could more likely lead to a long-term shutdown or redesign of the Hex game. The bottom line is, the scorched-earth approach of litigators is nothing new. Even if some of the claims are more shaky than others, it is worthwhile for Wizards to fire every bullet it has in the litigation gun. Next week, we will look at the merits of some of these claims and predict how this case might come out. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and legal-themed questions as segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy. If you want to hear more about this case and other similar topics, please check out my upcoming seminars at Origins Game Fair in June and at Gen Con in August.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.